This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Two Reuters journalists who were convicted and sentenced to 7 years in prison in Myanmar have been freed from prison. Walon and Kyaso U were convicted last September after covering the brutal military campaign in northwestern Rakhine State that drove nearly 700,000 Rohingya Muslims across the border into Bangladesh in August of 2017. They were arrested in December of that year after a meeting with two police officers at a restaurant in Yangon and given a stack of documents. Their release comes just 2 weeks after Myanmar's Supreme Court rejected an appeal of their convictions. Their lawyers said the original conviction should be thrown out because the journalists were set up by the police. The U.S. is expediting the arrival of a naval aircraft carrier strike group to the Arabian Sea after concerns Iran may be planning an attack against American or ally targets. The USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier is currently operating in the U.S. European Command Area of Responsibility. Now, all of this follows a statement by National Security Advisor John Bolton. We get more from VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman.
Bolton says the dispatch is intended to send a clear and unmistakable message to Iran that any attack on U.S. interests or on those of its allies will be met with unrelenting force. President Donald Trump has not commented directly on this, but in remarks to the Army's football team in the White House Rose Garden on Monday, he remarked the United States right now has the greatest military the world has ever known.
Hopefully we won't have too many battles because we're building a military so strong that nobody's going to mess with us. Nobody.
Both the U.S. Secretary of State and the Chief of Naval Operations say the deployment of the carrier strike group had been planned for some time. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
And this is VOA News. China says its negotiators are preparing to travel to the U.S. for their next round of trade talks this week, even after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened higher tariffs on billions of dollars of Chinese goods after he complained the process is taking too long. Mr. Trump's Twitter comments on Sunday about the new tariffs sent Asian stocks and U.S. futures tumbling Monday, and added uncertainty over the figure of U.S.-China trade negotiations. Despite the market drop, China's official media stayed silent on Mr. Trump's comments the whole morning. A House panel has fired the first shot in what could be a long legal fight with the Trump administration over the special counsel's Russia report. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
The House Judiciary Committee plans to vote Wednesday on holding Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress after he did not meet the panel's deadline today to hand over the full unredacted report and its underlying materials. Barr is unlikely to actually face criminal charges, since any contempt vote in the full House would simply send the matter to the U.S. Attorney here in Washington, who is a Justice Department employee likely to defend Barr. Democrats hope they're sending a message to the administration about congressional power. Still, President Trump has said he will fight all the subpoenas. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Congressional Democrats say they are reviving their investigation into the Trump administration's response to Hurricane Maria. The September 2017 storm tore through the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, killing about 3,000 people in Puerto Rico, leaving behind unprecedented destruction. Some parts of the U.S. territory still lack basic services, including running water. The House Oversight Committee, led by Democrat Elijah Cummings, sent letters Monday to the White House Health and Human Services and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Some administration officials say Puerto Rico has gotten just about $41 billion in storm relief, and only about $11 billion of that has been used. Several candidates from Australia and the main political parties have had to withdraw from the election campaign of the May 18th poll because of racist, homophobic, or anti-Islam statements.
In this election, several candidates have had to suddenly quit or disavow what they've said on social media in the past. Racist and sexist posts have resurfaced online. Australia's Liberal Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been quick to distance himself from three of his party's nominees.
Those comments are things that I don't share, that I don't accept, and I won't stand for.
Jessica Whelan is one of the Liberal candidates who was forced to quit. She's denied being responsible for a vulgar post that argued women who supported Islam should be mutilated.
That's VOA's Phil Mercer reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 7th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Ebola epidemic reaches a milestone.
As of today, we have 1,572 cases, of which 1,045 people died and 439 people were cured from Ebola.
Jessica Ilunga is the spokesperson for the DRC Health Ministry. South Africa's main political parties tried to win over on the side of voters ahead of tomorrow's vote. Liberian President George Weah suspends his deputy minister of information. Sierra Leone's government vows to get to the bottom of an alleged international phone scam. And Namibia declares a state of emergency.
We have declared a state of emergency because we are experiencing a serious drought that we have not experienced in the nearby past.
Netumbo Nade Undetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, and scientists warn of mass extinction of species. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has put together a task force comprising several ministries, including defense, to assist the health ministry in dealing with the country's latest Ebola outbreak. Jessica Ilunga, spokesperson for the DRC Health Ministry, says the task force will improve the overall security in the country. This comes after the Ebola epidemic reached a milestone over the weekend when the number of deaths exceeded 1,000. Spokesperson Ilunga says fighting the epidemic has been made difficult by attacks on hospitals and Ebola treatment centers in provinces such as Butembo.
As of today, we have 1,572 cases, of which 1,045 people died and 439 people were cured from Ebola.
Jessica, where in the DRC do you have the most cases of this Ebola virus? Which province?
So we managed to contain over the past 9 months the outbreak to two provinces of the country, and the provinces are North Kivu and Ituri.
We hear that some of the problems you have are due to violence in some regions. Could you talk to us about what is the situation with Butembo?
The current hotspot of the outbreak is in the city of Butembo and the neighboring health zones. So basically, in that city, we've had several major security incidents over the past month. For instance, that's where we had two Ebola treatment centers attacked. That's where one of our colleagues from WHO was killed. And that's also where our health agents get constantly attacked by young people in the community or also by local criminals. And so what we noticed is that every time we have a security incident, the number of cases and deaths obviously increase, simply because like a number of key response activities are suspended for an indefinite period of time. And so when you have contact tracing, vaccination, and also safe and dignified burials who are suspended for some time, obviously it gives time and space to the virus to spread within the community and make more victims, obviously.
About 4 years ago, also, West Africa had this experience with Ebola. There was a big debate in terms of what really was causing the Ebola virus to spread. In the case of the DRC, have you put your hand on exactly what is the root cause of this disease there?
There isn't just one root cause. I think it's just a combination of several factors at the same time. It just doesn't help. And so obviously you have this mistrust But then you also have this organized misinformation campaign. And on top of that, you have the security situation. You know, it's the first time an Ebola outbreak occurs in a conflict zone. And so we are dealing with something completely new and we need to adapt. And obviously, the security situation doesn't help response efforts.
The World Health Organization says that the number 1,000, this is the second deadliest in history. So let's talk about the DRC government. You have a new government there. What kind of emergency is there from the government side?
The new president set up a task force made up of several relevant ministries that can help the Ministry of Health with the Ebola outbreaks. And since we know that there is this very big security issue, obviously he brought to the table the ministries of Interior, the Ministry of Defense, and their role is to take concrete measures and steps to improve the security environment, not only for Ebola responders and health agents, but also for the population. With these measures, we do hope that Ebola responders will be able to do their job safely and end this outbreak as quickly as possible.
Jessica Ilonga is spokesperson for the Democratic Republic of Congo's health ministry. She was speaking with me from Geneva. South Africa votes tomorrow, Wednesday, in a national poll that could present the biggest challenge yet to the long-ruling African National Congress. The party and its competitors try to win over undecided voters in the final rallies. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The ruling ANC, the Established Democratic Alliance, and upstart Economic Freedom Fighters parties held their final rallies in Johannesburg, the nation's economic hub. The long-ruling ANC leads the 48 parties contesting the polls. The party has held power since 1994, but has weathered harsh criticism for a slew of government corruption scandals. The head of the ANC, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, acknowledged that Saturday.
We admit that we have made mistakes, and we put ourselves before our people and say, yes, we have made mistakes, but it is only those who are doing nothing who don't make mistakes.
Democratic Alliance leader Musi Maimane urged voters to look beyond personalities and traditional ties.
I need your vote, my fellow South Africans. This is not a popularity contest. This is not about who looks like what and whether you like this person. I'm not asking you to marry me.
Economic Freedom Fighters leader Julius Malema said no one should sit on the sidelines in this historic election.
Comrades, I want to say to all who are saying they are not going to vote because they don't see how the vote helped them, you are committing a suicide, because by not voting, you are giving the ANC power.
But analysts like Ivor Sarakinski of the University of the Witwatersrand say the top party's biggest enemies may be themselves.
We focus on the ANC's baggage and dynamics, but all the other parties have their own baggage. The DA and the controversies in terms of internal leadership, the EFF in terms of internal leadership, and questions about financial flows into the party. There's controversy around all of them.
He says the drama around corruption and internal leadership struggles, notably within the ANC, have distracted from real issues like the economy and the fact the nation remains deeply divided socially and economically a quarter century after the end of apartheid.
It's about identifying a party that has a manifesto that meets most of your needs, interests and concerns in terms of where the country's going in the future. And that's a tough ask, because the manifestos don't deal with what many people know are the real issues. And the politics and the emotion and the symbolism and political tactics has distorted how the various parties are marketing themselves. So it's a tough choice for voters at the moment in this election.
According to the Electoral Commission, 26.7 million South Africans are registered to vote Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 7th. And please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 14.5 minutes past the hour. Namibia's government has declared a state of emergency in response to a national disaster brought on by drought in all parts of the country. Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Netumbo Nandi Mdetwa, says President Hage Geingob has ordered several drought relief intervention measures to help farmers impacted by the disaster, the worst in the country's history. She also says the government is appealing for assistance from the international community.
We have declared a state of emergency because we are experiencing a serious drought that we have not experienced in the nearby park, which is affecting both humans as well as animals. So that means we have to feed closer to a million Namibians, because all our crop failure has failed, both in the commercial as well as in the communal areas. And another thing is also the water, that we have to see how we can provide water for both humans and the animals. Now, because of the rain failure, our livestock is facing a serious grazing shortage. So as a government, we have also to assist the farmers in order to maintain the breeding stock. But to sum up, we will be needing some food as well as water for both human beings and livestock.
Madam, I know these days people talk about climate change. What do you attribute this to?
I really want to believe that this is the impact of climate change, which we are experiencing in Africa, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm sure you might be aware that 2 weeks ago, our president as a chair of SADC has to call for humanitarian assistance for the 3 countries, namely Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe, who were affected by the cyclone Idai. Also, you have maybe heard some floods being experienced in South Africa. By then, in the same sub-region, you have a country like Namibia that has not received rain. So definitely, the impact of climate change is catching up with us.
The state of emergency, madam, how long does your government expect this to last?
What I can tell you that we will need food to feed our people until next year, May, should rain come in the next season, because May is normally the harvesting month. So from now until May, our people, the majority of them who depend on subsistence agriculture, and also because the commercial farming has also experienced a serious problem, will need food to be provided until May. And since in the country we don't have, we have to look outside the country.
This is the month of May. What season is it in Namibia? Is it rainy season or dry season?
Now we are almost approaching the winter, and that is the time people will start now to prepare to harvest. And April, May, when the harvest is good, the farmers would already start feeding in fresh vegetables. And then come now May, June, the whole harvesting, and then they can store their crops.
Madam, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you always.
Thank you very much, and we really appreciate that you are following what is happening in Namibia, and that is the situation. It's a state of emergency, and anyone who can come to our assistance will appreciate it.
Netumbo Nandi Mdetwa is Namibia's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She was speaking with me from the capital, Windhoek. Liberian President George Manenweah has suspended his Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Affairs for sowing ethnic division among Liberians when responding to a planned June 7 anti-government protest that is dubbed Save the State. The Deputy Minister, Eugene Fangong, said he will organize a counter-protest of country people because he said the June 7 protest organizers are Congo or Americo-Liberians. As Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia, President Weah says his government remains committed to a one country, one people policy with zero tolerance on divisive rhetoric.
UJ Fagon is notoriously the most popular government official in the George Weah government. His outbursts on social media and his defense of the government and President George Weah to the annoyance of many gives him a controversial fame. According to Presidential Press Secretary Solo Kebe, Deputy Minister Fagon was suspended because he was manufacturing hate among Liberians with his recent social media post.
He felt that some of the statements and comments that were made quite recently by Eugene on his private and personal Facebook page was unhealthy, was divisive, and so he think he needs to take some actions. It's like a caveat for other people to follow suit, not to use those kind of comments that would divide the people.
Mr. Kebe said the decision by President Weah is intended to send a clear warning to all government officials and all citizens to stop dividing Liberians along ethnic lines. He said acts like the one carried out by Mr. Fagon undermine the president's portfolio as peace ambassador and his dream to unite Liberians.
The president is the president of every tribe, every person in Liberia, every Liberian citizen. So he felt that it was against his doctrine of being peace ambassador, his doctrine of reconciling the people of Liberia, his principle of moving Liberia forward, maintaining peace and stability.
Deputy Minister Fagon posted on his personal Facebook page saying he will lead a country people march on June 8 to counter an anti-government protest scheduled for June 7, 2019. Mr. Fagon labeled the organizers of the June 7 march as participants in Liberia's 14-year civil crisis. He called them rebels and Congo or American Liberians, who he said are allegedly against President Weah. The United States Embassy in Monrovia Monday released a statement characterizing the deputy minister's comments as irresponsible. Presidential spokesman Kebe denies President Weah suspended Mr. Fagon because of the alarm raised by the U.S. Embassy.
I don't think it's any statement from Lima Boye or from the U.S. Embassy that compared the president to take this action. The president took this action to send a caveat, to send a clear message to other government officials. The president is someone of peace. He believes in peace and stability. He believes in unifying Liberia.
The suspension of Deputy Minister Fagon went viral on social media, with many praising President Weah for his decision. However, others believe an outright dismissal would have been the right decision. This is not the first time that Deputy Minister Fagon has found himself in hot water with authorities. He was jailed last September by the House of Representatives for publicly insulting some members of that body. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
Sierra Leone's information minister says his government will spare no effort in tracking down the person or persons involved in an alleged international phone scam that the U.S. Federal Communications Commission says originates from Sierra Leone. According to the commission, the scam is called One Ring. The aim is to get U.S.-based individuals targeted to call the international number back, resulting in high international phone charges on their local phones. Information Minister Mohamed Rachman Swar says President Julius Maada Bio's government is rebranding Sierra Leone to attract foreign direct investment and will not allow any individual or groups to derail that plan.
We are aware that many Sierra Leoneans are receiving phone calls from irregular numbers. What do I mean by this? They receive calls as if they are international numbers, usually from suspicious destinations, which we definitely frown on as a country. We believe this is a scam, and as a government, we have taken necessary steps to address the situation because we realize it is both costing government millions of dollars and at the same time pose a major national security threat. The National Telecommunications Commission has been very vigilant, searching for SIM boxes wherever they could find them. And recently, there was a major SIM bust here, for which the National Telecommunications Commission has imposed regulatory fines on one hand while the matter is being prosecuted in court. It involved one Chinese national together with other nationals from Ghana and Sierra Leoneans who were arrested during a sting operation. That is currently in the courts, and we are looking forward to the conclusion of that matter.
So is it possible that someone with connection to Sierra Leone telephone, the information here says these calls are likely trying to prompt consumers to call the number back, often resulting in per-minute toll charges, similar to a 900 number. So is it likely that someone with knowledge of the telephone system may be playing with the Sierra Leone telephone exchange program?
Well, this is supposed to be an organized crime ring, it does not necessarily mean that the people are domiciled in Sierra Leone. The fact of the matter is the National Telecommunications Commission and the law enforcement agencies are trying to crack that up. As part of that effort, we recently initiated a couple of sting operations which led to the arrest of a Chinese national together with two other nationals and a Sierra Leonean. They are currently facing charges in court, while at the same time, telephone companies whose SIM cards were found at the scene of the crime have been fined regulatory fines as per the National Telecommunications Commission registration requirements relating to SIM cards.
So when you say their SIM cards were found at the scene of the crime, you're not suggesting that those telephone companies knew something, because somebody could have bought those SIM cards and used them. Is that possible?
Your guess is as good as mine. The matter is currently in court, and I will only ask that we wait and see. But one thing is clear, we will spare no efforts to ensure that whoever is involved faces the full force of the law. Because we are a respected member of the international community, we are rebranding our country, we want to attract foreign direct investment into the country, we cannot allow anybody from anywhere to torpedo those efforts.
Mohamed Ratman Suare is Sierra Leone's information minister, who's speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Scientists gathering in Paris are issuing a dramatic warning of the effects that human activity is having on the world's biodiversity, saying species are being wiped out at an unprecedented rate. Their 1,800-page report was released on Monday at a meeting of experts and officials from 132 nations at the 7th session of the Intergovernmental Science and Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Nicolas Pinot has more from Paris.
The situation, as scientists describe it, is serious. In a statement, IBES estimates that about 1 million animal and plant species are now threatened with extinction over the next few decades, something that has never happened before in human history. Nature is globally declining at an unprecedented rate in human history, warns the scientists' report. The scenario they describe is frightening because all depend on the same ecosystem, without exception. Biodiversity is the diversity of the 8 million animal and plant species on Earth. The current rate of their extinction, scientists say, is higher than the average of the last 10 million years. Thomas Brooks is the International Union for Conservation of Nature's chief scientist.
On average, about a quarter of all species across very many vertebrate and plant groups are threatened with a high risk of extinction.
This IPBES gathering is the first of several events to put the ecosystem at the center of the discussions. Next deadline, the G7 at the end of August in Biarritz, chaired by France, which wants to put biodiversity on the agenda. Nico Pino for VOA News in Paris.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Democratic Republic of Congo's President Félix Tshisekedi has put together a task force comprising several ministries, including the defense, to assist the health ministry in dealing with the country's latest Ebola outbreak. Jessica Ilonga, the spokesperson for the DRC Health Ministry, says the task force will improve the overall security in the country. This comes after the Ebola epidemic reached a milestone over the weekend when the number of deaths exceeded 1,000. Namibia's government has declared a state of emergency in response to a national disaster brought on by drought in all parts of the country. Minister of International Relations and Cooperation Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah says President Hage Geingob has ordered several drought relief intervention measures to help farmers impacted by the disaster. And Sierra Leone's Information Minister says his government will spare no effort in tracking down the person or persons involved in an alleged international phone scam that the U.S. Federal Communication Commission says originates from Sierra Leone. And that is it for this Tuesday, May 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in You'll be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.